VentureCast.
Joining me on the Lawrence Ross Show today, October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, and I have with me Emily from Phoenix, Arizona. Emily, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing good. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great, and thanks for joining me on the little podcast today. So were you born in Arizona, or did you move there when you were younger?
Yeah, I moved here about 15 years ago. I'm from the Sacramento area. But now I'm down here in Phoenix.
So your particular disability, was this something that you were born with, or is this something that you got later on in life?
Yeah, later on in life, March 31st, 2014, I was in a motorcycle accident. And I was driving the motorcycle. And so after that, you know, I became physically disabled. And then maybe 8 years later, I developed fibromyalgia, maybe like 6 years later. But either way, it developed into fibromyalgia and a bunch of other different things that the doctors have found. Some stuff that I was born with, two extra spine. My L6, L7 apparently is not supposed to be there, but I have it. So I do have an extra long spine that I was born with. That's about it. That causes a lot of back pain.
Did you run into anything, or did something hit you?
Yeah, so I was just getting off of work, and I was just driving home, and someone made an illegal left turn in front of me, and so I T-boned them because of their illegal left turn. So it was all their fault and everything, and I had to sue them and whatnot. But yeah, I ended up in the hospital immediately, obviously, cause I was dying, and, they did like immediately 5 surgeries. I didn't even know that I was in an accident until I woke up after those surgeries. So I never dealt with like experiencing the accident. I didn't experience the accident. It just happened. And then I woke up later. So that's something I'm kind of grateful for, because I have seen people who are awake after they get hit by a car, and that does not look fun.
What exactly was the recovery process like for you, like, post the accident?
I think I woke up maybe, like, the next day, because I got hit at night, I think I got hit at 9 o'clock at night, maybe. And then, so I didn't wake up until, like, the next day, maybe, like, noon. I already had, like, multiple life-saving surgeries. And then, so, yeah, I just woke up. The first thing I remember is, like, my teeth were in so much pain because they got smashed out, you know? So what hurt the most was actually my face and my teeth and stuff, because I hit the pavement really hard. And then, you know, I see, like, my family surrounding me and everything and just looking at me. And the first thing I did was I was, like, take a picture of me right now. Like, I need a picture of this right now. I literally just almost died, and I'm alive right now. So just take a picture of me. So my mom took a picture of me. And, yeah, sometimes I'm just happy to, like, have another chance. Because not even, like, half the people on this earth experience almost dying. And it's really traumatic, and it's something that, like, a lot of people don't have to experience at all. And so it's really crazy to, like, be the one who has to experience it. But I was in the hospital for, like, I mean, I was getting treatment for total about 6 or 7 months. So I was in the hospital for, like, almost a whole year, from, like, March until, I don't even know. But I was in the hospital for, like, a couple months, and then after that, they had to put me in the nursing home because, you know, I had to do physical therapy every single day, 3 times a day. Like, I would wake up to my physical therapist, like, moving my legs and stuff, because I had injuries from, like, the top of my head to the bottom of my toes. So my whole body was messed up. And yeah, I just had to do physical therapy, like, all day, every day. I had to learn how to walk again in the nursing home. And I was just, like, 19. I was, like, I think I turned 20 in the hospital. But I was just, like, 19, 20, and I was in a nursing home. And then one day I got out, you know. But Yeah, it was really hard to go through when you're like 19. And now I'm 29, so it's been 10 years now.
What are some of the disadvantages that you've noticed after getting diagnosed with fibromyalgia?
I was getting diagnosed with fibromyalgia the month that I was getting kicked off my mom's health insurance. So I had to go get on state health insurance, which is great because everything's free. And I was so terrified getting kicked off my mom's insurance, but it was actually fine because, the state health insurance, everything's free. I'm covered 100% for anything I need all the time. But so I was switching over when I was having my first ever fibromyalgia attack and I couldn't move. I obviously needed pain meds and I didn't know how to get those because I hadn't had them since I got out of the hospital. And then they filled me like a couple more prescriptions after I left the hospital, and that was it. They didn't even tell me that I was addicted to drugs, that I was addicted to opioids, and morphine. So I didn't know why I was like having withdrawal symptoms at all. And then so when I was having the fibromyalgia attacks like in 2018 or something, yeah, I didn't know what to do. I wasn't using any pain management at that point. I was just like dealing with my life, like moving less, doing less things. But then yeah, the fibromyalgia kicked in and it was like the worst pain I've ever felt. My whole body couldn't move. And then so I had to go get my health insurance switched over from my mom's to the state. And then I immediately went in to go get pain management and all kinds of back braces, neck braces that I haven't had before. And then they put me back on like the meds that I thought I didn't need when I, got out of the hospital, like gabapentin, the cyclobenzaprine, the stuff I thought I didn't need at all. All of a sudden, I needed it. I needed all of it. And so the gabapentin and the cyclobenzaprine and the nabumetone, they kind of keep my fibro settled. But I still can't do anything. If I start doing a bunch of stuff, cleaning, cooking, or anything like that, I can create a fibro attack and it'll just happen whenever. And I don't have access to pain meds at all, so I just have to deal with it, because the pain med industry, it's like hard to get pain meds when you're this young. So when you're 29, you're not a priority. At all. So like right now, if I had a fibromyalgia attack that was like really bad, I would have to go to the ER.
So how have you adjusted to life after getting this diagnosis? And would you consider ever becoming an advocate?
I definitely think about advocating for everyone who's disabled. I want everyone to have like the same human rights, and I want us to be equal to like other people and everything. So I consider myself an advocate. I just don't do a lot of action because disabled people, we're all sitting at home. We're sitting at home, trying to just survive, And so, for example, protesting something I can't do because I have the traumatic brain injury. So I went to a protest a couple years ago and I ended up probably needing to go to the emergency room. And I was only out there for like 30 minutes, because Arizona, the heat is not working with me. It works like against me. It works great for my bones. Like the Arizona heat feels great on my bones and stuff, but for my head, it can like disable me even more. But adjusting like even for like the protesting thing that I did a couple years ago, adjusting, you have to adjust. When you get these types of disabilities, like I have to do less things. Maybe I have to bring a chair with me to certain places. Maybe I have to ask people for things that they're not used to. Like with the Americans with Disability Act, maybe I have to ask like someone for a chair somewhere. And they're like, a chair? Like they don't get it. And I'm like, yeah, with the Americans with Disabilities Act, you need to like provide me a chair. If you guys have no like sitting areas, like I need a chair, and they'll just be so confused. And then I just explained to them, the ADA, and hope they get it and hope they give me a chair. But yeah, adjusting, I'm sure every disabled person knows, like, we do a lot less, like, when we become disabled or if we're born disabled, like, we're doing less than other people. Like, we're not able. That's why we're disabled.
Right.
Like, we're less able to do just a couple of things, you know, depending on what your disability is. But I'm like a disabled person who doesn't need a wheelchair. So there's a lot of people like that. Like, there's elderly people who are just like me. They have, like, mobility issues, but they don't need a wheelchair yet. So people see that, like, we don't have a wheelchair. They don't really understand how we can be disabled if we're not in a wheelchair. And, like, yeah, they just really, a lot of people just might not get it. 'Cause if they can't see it, they don't know. But yeah, I have to do a lot of things. Like, if I go to, like, a little festival, a little carnival, like a state fair that's right next to me right now down the street, I'd have to plan it all. I have to make sure my parking is super close, because if I have to walk through a parking lot, then my feet are already done. Then I'm done for the day. I can't go to the fair anymore. Like, I need to go sit down for 10 minutes. So I have to, like, park close. I have to go do all the stuff I want to do. I have to make sure there's seating everywhere so I could sit, like, every 10 minutes, because I can only stand for so long. And then sitting even hurts, like, so I can only sit for so long as well. Like, I could stand for 10 minutes. I could probably sit for 30. And so that, it causes a lot of things that I could do less than other people, like, a lot of people wouldn't expect, you know, like, just doing a simple daily thing, like walking around the mall or walking around the city for the day. Like, I'm limited. I'm very limited. And I know when it's time to stop, you know, I know what I have to do to make sure that I could go longer, like walk around the mall a little longer, get to all the stores, you know? And if I ever go to Vegas, I immediately get the disability scooter, because that city is unwalkable.
Swinging over to the social media side of things, we got connected, I think it was on Twitter, because of the YouTuber Trisha Paytas. I mean, well, let me just say, she didn't formally introduce us. I mean, like, I can't remember exactly the string of events as to who led who to, you know, however this happened. But nevertheless, what was your first experience with her?
I saw her online just crying her eyes out. And I just felt like, I don't know, like, she needs a friend.
She needs a hug.
So I followed her.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though, like, we don't talk, we don't know each other or anything like that. Like, she just needs people around her. Like,
yeah, yeah.
When she was struggling, she needs, like, those comments. She needs the support, because no one in her actual life was giving her any support, nothing. And so when you see it online, she's, like, crying on her kitchen floor. It's like,
oh, I know.
Well, I want to, you know, help this girl. Let me follow her.
Yep. Anytime that would happen, all I wanted to do was just, like, reach to the screen and just hug her with the Simon and Garfunkel song "Bridge Over Troubled Water" playing in the background. It's like it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. You know, you got.
Yeah.
This.
No, everything is kind of okay. So.
Right. Yeah.
It's a good story.
Back in 2019, Trisha was on her heartbreak tour. One of the stops was Phoenix, Arizona, and I believe it was July 28th, I believe, is when this was.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I could look it up right now. I think it was July 26th, maybe, but it could have been July 28th.
It was the 28th.
Because it was right by my birthday.
Yep. Because I remember the entire tour schedule was July 27th in Dallas, Texas. Then the 28th, it was Phoenix, Arizona. Then on the 10th, it was in New York City, New York. And then let's see, then August 11th, it was in Philadelphia. Then August 24th, it was in Chicago. Then August 25th, it was Kansas, Missouri, which is one that I was at, which has the video of me talking with her. And I say, yeah, I'm wearing my Phil Hendry hat. And she goes, oh, I love Phil Hendry. And I'm like, oh, yes. And I jump like I'm like Rudolph when Fireball tells him he's cute. Then it was in a whole bunch of other places. Like, I think it was like North Carolina.
She went everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was Toronto one day. And then the next day, Boston, Massachusetts. I can only imagine what the must have sounded like. A bunch of Bostonians hanging out at the Wool Call for that show. What are you talking about there, Tracy? You drag me out at 5 o'clock in the morning. I drive you to the show. which is at this, place. You know, I got to be home at noon so I can watch the Patriots kick off. Ah, oh, come on, Bobby. I keep telling you. She's a really nice girl. You got to be nice. All right, I got. Oh, wait. Oh, my gosh. Is that her? Yeah, that's her. Haven't you seen my picture of her on my phone? Oh, gosh. She looks pretty hot. She looks cute. Are we going to get some clam chowder after this? We got to get some clam chowder after this. I know, so you can watch Tom Brady.
After I went in July, because the Heartbreak Tour, like the venue that she was at, it was right down the street from my house. So
Oh, nice.
I took my $4 Uber to the venue, and I got super wasted, and I met her mom and everything, because her mom was just standing in the back, sitting there by the bar, and I was like, okay, hello, Miss Lena, and we met, and then I went to California, like, the next month, or, like, the month after, I don't even know, it was, like, within the time frame, and she was doing her last show in L.A.
The Globe Theater.
On that day, and I could have went to go see the show, and when I got out of the show, I could have drove back to Arizona, and it would have worked out, but I don't know why I didn't do it, but I should have done it. So I was going to go twice, and it was going to be way cool. That's another place, actually, when I went to the Van, it's called the Van Buren, I think is where she had her show. Oh, wait, no, it's, is it the Van Buren?
The Globe Theater,
oh, it's
I think.
At the press room.
Oh, the press room.
She had hers at the press room.
Oh,
it's, like, by the Van Buren.
Oh, okay.
But, so when I went in there, it was all standing. There was no seating at all. And that's one of the times, that's, like, one of the first times I had to ask them, like, hey, I am ADA, and you guys do not have ADA seats at all, so what do you provide? And they put me... Like, there was, like, the whole section where all her fans were,
right.
And then there was, like, a rope thing, and they put me on the other side of the rope in a chair, which was fine, because
right.
People thought I was VIP. They couldn't tell that I was there because I was disabled, like, and I need a little chair to sit, you know? And then so, like, these two girls came up to me, and that we were talking and everything, and then the show started, and it was so cute, and they were just, like, there with me. We don't even know each other. And they were just sitting there with me so that I wasn't all alone in my little fake VIP.
Oh, that's cute. Oh.
But, yeah, that was, like, really – because I knew that I could not go to concerts, but I still went to the Trisha one.
Right.
Like, I just knew, I thought it was going to be bad, but I was like, you know, it's happening at noon. It's at noon time. It'll be fine. It's in the daytime. It's not at night with a bunch of crazy people. Like, I'll be fine. So that was, like, really my first time ever saying, hey, I'm ADA. Like, and also the venue not having ADA seats. There's a lot of places over here. They don't offer the ADA seats. You just buy a regular ticket. And then when you get into the venue, you have to show someone, hey, I need ADA seats because you guys don't offer them online.
Ugh.
And then you have to get someone to put you in the seat, which is fine. It's just like, maybe if I didn't know that, I wouldn't have bought the ticket if I didn't know that that's what you do. In a lot of states, you don't have to pay for parking with your handicap plaque for your car. And then especially at these concerts, the concerts, they make you pay like $27, whatever. Skip it. Don't pay it at all. Because when you show up to the venue in the parking lot and you're going to go park and you say, I'm handicapped, that handicap stuff is reserved without you needing a parking ticket. You are fully reserved. You don't have to pay any parking tickets. We're exempt from paying for parking in a lot of states. So like in California, I have free parking. In Arizona, I have free parking. I haven't been to a lot of other states, but I assume it's the same. And yeah, I mean, at concerts, I've realized I didn't even need to pay this parking at multiple venues, like, especially like an outside venue. I don't know. There's been tons of parking for the handicap section, and like, they do not check if you paid for it.
Mm.
So you could save a little money that way. And then if they need you to pay for it, then you just pay for it right there. But you could just skip that and hope they don't charge you.
I guess you could say that one of the advantages of having a disability is that you don't have to pay for parking.
Because I live in downtown, and as you know, like in any downtown area, there's just like a couple of parking spaces and at per block, there's only like one handicap spot per block. But that works out for me because there's only, there's, I was thinking just the other day, there's never two disabled people in the same spot at once because otherwise we would have a parking problem.
Right.
And there's always parking for me, so there must not be any other handicapped people or disabled people around me if I'm able to get a parking space whenever I want.
One of the questions I got asked is, if there was a surgery to restore your eyesight, would you want it so you'd be able to see again? And I go, well, no. And for two reasons. One, I was born with it. I'm kind of used to it, really. And the other thing is, you know how many ugly people you got to deal with? So there you go. There's that.
Right. Yeah, and then you have to look at yourself in the mirror one day and decide if you like yourself or not.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You don't really have to deal with like self-image issues, do you? Or
no.
Or do you have like image issues?
I would probably say the image issue I have is trying to look directly into the camera. That's an image issue, you know?
Yeah.
Is there anybody on your social media platforms you'd like to say hello to?
I'd like to say hi to my friends who know me on Twitter. If they're listening to this, that would be cool. Yeah, I just hope a lot of people who struggle with the same things will hear it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, my guest today has been Emily out of Arizona. And thank you much, Emily, for hanging out with me for a little bit. If you'd like to follow Emily on social media, it's...
Not a Real Vegan 94 on Twitter, but you do not have to follow me. I just have that, like, you know, for fun. I'm not out for followers or any exposure or anything. That's all for you, buddy. That's for you and your radio show. You know, you need exposure.
Well, thanks again, Emily, and hope everybody out there has a great day.
Thanks for listening.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid.
Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on ElectricCast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
ElectricCast.